Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we're going to talk Boogie today. How many Boogie puns do you think I could squeeze into this thing?
Oh, I think this is more going to be a work of art over the course of the season for you. As things emerge, but yeah, let's see if you can cram it all into today. It would be nice to get that out of the way. Although I don't suspect that's going to be how it works out.
It's not as fun when you know what's coming. When I let people know what's coming, it's like puns are a lot more fun when you let your guard down a little bit and then up jumps the Boogie.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing I hate the most is when I actually like your puns. Like, you had one on CJ McCollum on Twitter today where I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. I hate myself for this. I'll just like his post. I will not compliment him. He's pretty funny, though.
Jen calls that like that's when you really question your life. Is when you
right.
Like, oh, damn it. I spent too much time around this guy.
I like that one. Exactly.
As I said, though, we are going to preview DeMarcus Cousins' season. This was one, Pete, you specifically asked. You said,
yes, sir.
This is the dude that I really want to preview. Mm-hmm. So I figured I'd throw you a bone. You weren't able to preview Alex Caruso. That went to the big Balder brand himself, Harrison. But you know what? I'm looking forward to Cousins. It almost feels cheap to say that he's the Lakers X factor because of how good he is. But, it being cheap doesn't make it not correct, right? That doesn't change the reality of the situation, being that if Boogie is 80% of what he could be, something that, Jen said on this show, that she seems to think that 80% is a perfectly reasonable expectation for him, then that's a damn good player that the Lakers
really
could
is,
be looking
man.
At. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've got. So I want to start with the idea of small ball and kind of where the NBA's gone in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. I always thought that small ball is a bit of a misnomer. That really you go small to go skilled. That's the value in it, right? Is that you're going to have more guys who are 6'7", 6'8", who can shoot, who can handle the ball, who can do these things that perimeter players do, than 7-footers. And that was the purpose of that. The Lakers, in the better case scenarios with Boogie, AD, and LeBron, they've got very large human beings who can do those things that small ball guys can do, right? There's no advantage to being smaller than a guy. It's just like you can handle the ball, you can shoot. Well, what if you can do that in a guy who's 7 feet tall and 270 pounds, right? Boogie is able to – now, everything in the half court hinges on Boogie's jumper. Yeah. He shot 27.4% from three last year. The previous year, he shot 35.4%. And the year before that, he shot 36.1% from three. That's a huge difference, and a huge difference in how teams defend you, a huge difference in whether or not a too big lineup can work. So all of it hinges on that. But if he can get back to that, then you've really got a guy who's able to provide the small ball aspects that you really like on the offensive end to a high level while having an absolute beast of a human. The one area box that he doesn't check is as a perimeter defender. That's the other reason you do that. The ability to switch onto guards and to hedge high on pick and rolls and just all that stuff. That isn't something that Boogie can do. So there will be situations where even if in that best case 80% of what he was scenario, he'll be kind of played off the court. There'll be situations he can't be out there. But for the most part, I there's really a lot to be excited about.
Absolutely. As with all of these previews, we're going to talk a little bit about, the player that in this case, DeMarcus is coming into this season. We're going to talk about some of the individual improvements he could make from last year, and then we're going to talk about how he fits in the team-wide construct. We've already kind of started to talk about some of this stuff conceptually. Last year is just impossible to really define. It was such a unique situation that he was playing in, and not just being a Golden State Warrior and trying to fit in with a team that was ready made basically. Like the I always thought, and this was something that I don't know was ever really fully addressed while DeMarcus was a Warrior was none of their best five-man lineups were going to feature him. Like,
right.
That was just never going to be the case. And as a result, like, that was always going to be a tough pill to swallow for him. And it crept up on them, like, right from the beginning of the season. So, you know, while usually you say, well, talent just wins out, and these things just, you know, at the end of the day, get the most talented group that you can and fit be damned. Some of the stuff matters when you're talking about the politics of a player is talented and is good and somebody who has been used to the limelight and just unquestionably being a part of those best five-man lineups, as Boogie has been all throughout his career to that point. And then him not being in that, you know, that I thought threw his entire season off right from the beginning.
And we can't talk about this without talking about him coming back from the injury. You know, he didn't play until January or so on this team that is as established of a core as there is in the NBA, that knows who their final five is going to be with Iggy as in one of those spots. So his fit with Golden State, those two factors, that continuity that Golden State has, which the Lakers don't have, and Boogie's going to be coming into training camp not coming off of an injury, right? Well, he had the quad injury, but he played at the end of he probably rushed back. He didn't look all the way himself in the finals, but he was still playing at the end of that series, right? And so by the time training camp rolls around, he's going to be as close to 100% as, you know, barring any new injury.
Like 2 years.
Right. Yeah. And so that isn't – at no point – in the Golden State season was he not coming off of an injury. He came back mid-year, worked some of the rust off, had a really good April. A lot of guys have really good Aprils that aren't always translatable to the full season. But then got hurt, I think, in the Clippers series or early in the Houston series, I don't remember which, with that quad injury, rush back. So all of it was kind of this lost season for him in a lot of respects. I'm really curious to see what he's like in that second year off of the Achilles injury, which is what doctors always say is the, you know, the year where you really get it back, and just how much of it is translatable from Golden State. I have thoughts on that, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah, the big key for me is, you know, with coming off of the injury, can his feet move quick enough to get under him for those jumpers? Like, that I thought was shooting starts from the ground up. Like, that's just, it's just one of the absolute rules of shooting. And I don't think it's by any means whatsoever a coincidence that he had what, his worst shooting season from three since he started actually making them, right?
Right, right.
So he went, so in 2014-2015, he shot 0.1 threes per game at a 25% clip, right?
Right.
Then he jumps up to 33% on three attempts per game, 36 on five, 36-ish on five again, 38 on about six a game, and then 35 on six. And then last year it drops down to 3.2 attempts at a 27% clip. And I think that had a lot to do with the fact that his body, especially being such a big dude, it just was never quite comfortable in the way that you would like to be as a shooter. And hopefully, and we'll talk about this in the next segment, that's where the improvement really starts. And that's really where the improvement really matters. So hang tight. We'll come back and we'll talk about that. So my question becomes then, you know, we already talked to Jen, I believe it was last week or the week before. This time of year, it just kind of blends together. Like, how hard has it been for you to just keep track of days?
It's hard anyway for me doing this, but yeah, over the course. And then it becomes like a, wow, I really have no purpose in life without basketball, do I? And then it becomes this like self-exploration over a month and a half of like, I'm really useless without the NBA around and I don't like myself very much and all that good stuff. So yeah, it's been tough.
Jen's like, get a hobby. And I'm like, I'm not good at literally anything else other than this.
Well, also like what happens, like this was my hobby for my whole life. I was a regular dude. We were going to work in a regular job until like age 36. And then it's like, okay, this is what you do all the time. And now I love it. It's what I do all the time. It's just like, like in those times between, like, okay, now what? You know, I'm the dog that caught the car, right? It's right, like, right. Okay, now what do I do with the car? You know? So.
Yeah, it's a tough life we live here, Pete.
Lots of complaining.
All right, let's talk about DeMarcus.
With his jumper, man. Yeah, with his jumper. It was very obvious he didn't have his legs underneath him. He was kind of slinging the ball to compensate for that. He'll probably have to do some corrective work over this summer to really get his form back to what it was. But that's the thing, is we're not asking a guy to do something that he wasn't able to do prior to his injury, right? Just make 35% of your threes, be a guy that teams have to close out to. This was something that would have been really valuable in Golden State and was valuable with the Pelicans, is that with as much of a bruiser as he was the perimeter guy while AD was the guy crashing the front of the rim. And being able to put Boogie on the perimeter, so he's very turnover prone, but there's a clear distinction for when he's turnover prone versus when he's a real asset as a playmaker. When he is like attacking closeouts or is trying to make something happen himself, it's an adventure, man. It's yeah. And it makes some of the worst turnovers you've ever seen.
His feet get ahead, or his head gets ahead,
ahead of his feet. Yep.
And it's amazing. It's amazing. Right. 'Cause it's also funny. So, you know, a turnover is probably coming and the defender is like, I could take a charge here, but good God, do you see how big this human being is?
Yeah.
Could run me over, but go ahead.
A lot of business decisions like we talked about the other day. And he'll be effective on those, right? If he can get into open space, that downhill nature of how he drives can get him to the rim a little bit quicker, right? I'm curious on what that's going to look like on year two from the Achilles. That actually might not be a bad thing, Boogie attacking fewer closeouts and instead because that's where it can really get out of pocket. But where he has value is where you have set plays and Boogie's on the elbow or at the top of the key and you're running a wide pin down for the guy in the corner, you know, that can flow into a handoff with LeBron or something like that, right? And that was one of the big statistical differences on the positive end in his time in Golden State. He went from 5.4 assists to 5 turnovers in 2017-18 in combined time with the Kings and the Pelicans that was all with the Pelicans. So 5.4 to 5 on assist to turnover ratio. Last year it was 3.6 to 2.4, so a 1.5 to 1 assist to turnover ratio, because of stylistically it's a lot of shooters running off of screens, Boogie holding the ball at the top of the key or on the wing, trying to get different guys the ball out of different actions. The Lakers will be stylistically different than the Warriors in that we don't have a lot of shooters to run off of screens, and just like the construction of both Vogel's roster and how LeBron's rosters typically operate. But there will be, I predict, a lot of horns and elbow sets, a lot of delay series, which puts Boogie at the top of the key, where Boogie can really be a playmaker. Those might be better in like Boogie with the bench scenarios, and we should probably talk about that. But that value, he really demonstrated some of that in Golden State in a way that he never could when he was the man in Sacramento or even in New Orleans, because his responsibilities were those playmaking responsibilities on the perimeter. He had AD next to him, but AD had a very different role than he did.
Yeah, it's funny that you talk about the horn sets and then the flowing sets that go into LeBron getting somebody getting a handoff from Boogie. I was asked in yesterday's mailbag to kind of try and outline one of the sets that I would really rely heavily on, and it was basically like AD setting a weak side screen for LeBron. You could have it strong side. Where Boogie has the ball kind of at the elbow area, AD sets that screen for LeBron and dives. Boogie gets the handoff or gives the handoff off to LeBron. He kind of pick and pops. Then you have a shooter in that corner as well, kind of rotating over there, and like just ideas like that. It's just it's funny. You and I went to the same kind of scent. I also, the thing that I really picked up on while the Warriors were playing the Raptors in the finals was I thought the Warriors over the course of the series really made a cognizant decision. All right, Boogie's going to get run off the court defensively on the other end. But that means we have to take even further advantage of all the advantages, especially size, that he has on the offensive end. And this is where it's going to be interesting to see how Vogel handles this. And we'll talk about some of this a little bit more in the next segment when we get into the team construct. But I like the idea of Boogie crashing the boards, because it serves two purposes. One, you take full advantage of Boogie's size and those things that you're going to be able to against small teams when they're trying to run him off the court. And also, it slows the other team down, because they aren't able to leak out if you have, you know, Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins and they're crashing the boards on the offensive side of the ball. So it's just it might not, you know, there are going to be times where that comes back to bite the Lakers, but I'm just trying to find ways to just take full advantage of Boogie, especially early in the year while he's still trying to get fully immersed into what the Lakers really need from him.
For sure. Now, modern like NBA philosophies on crashing the boards is most teams just send one guy for the purpose of just the analytics have shown that.
Yeah, you're better
putting
off.
More guys getting back on transition defense. Like, you're going to save more points than you're going to get. Now, the advantage of if you're doing that with Boogie and AD on the floor at the same time is I'm having whomever of the two is being defended by the smaller guy crashing the boards. That was one advantage that AD enjoyed alongside Boogie, was you have to put the bigger guy on DeMarcus. DeMarcus can pull them out onto the perimeter. If they don't, and you put the smaller guy on DeMarcus because he's on the perimeter, then you just switch roles, and then Boogie's going to, you know, go to work down low against a small. But there was a lot of like Trey Lyles trying to keep Harrison Barnes, trying to keep Anthony Davis off of the offensive glass. Yeah. You know what I mean? And one of the advantages to having a big at the top of the key, we see this with Denver in Jokic as well, is that's the position, you call that the protector, in that as you're experiencing that transition between offense to defense, if you get an odd number fast break or something like that, you have a legitimate rim protector that's covering, that's in that last man back spot rather than a guard. Well, oftentimes that'd be a point guard or a shooting guard. You have a legitimate big back there that can help, you know, that can help you discourage from, you know, help teams discourage teams from getting all the way to the rim in fast break or semi-transition situations.
Yeah, it's just something that, you know, again, the Lakers are going to struggle, I think, transition defensively when Boogie and AD are out there together, just because that's a big slow lineup.
Right? Sure,
that's just a big slow line, so it's going to be kind of tough for them. And so how can you turn that disadvantage at least into a net neutral? Right, you're not going to turn it into an outright advantage the other way, but how can you make it a net neutral or at least mitigate some of that damage that you're going to get? Because Boogie isn't, you know, he's not a rim runner in either direction. He's
correct.
If anything, I would be a little concerned if he was trying to get up and down the court, right? Because that extra wear and tear when you're dealing with somebody who already has that Achilles tear in his past, like that, I would rather him do stuff that he's a little bit more comfortable with. So the idea of like free throw line to free throw line is interesting to me.
You know? Yeah.
All right, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk about how all of this fits together and what the Lakers need from Boogie in the team-wide construct and you know, this is where it gets a little interesting. This is where, you know, some of the ideas of what we think is conducive to winning in 2019 kind of bashes its head up against the wall of what you think of with the DeMarcus Cousins team. So hang tight. We'll be back here in a bit. So the hang-up I've been running into more than just about anything, well, other than Rondo, right? The idea of Rondo in the rotation, that's just the hang-up of all hang-ups. But with players who actually matter and should actually matter, the thing that I've been kind of running up against is we know that Anthony Davis teams are better when he's at the five. We know that LeBron James teams are better when he's at the four. How does DeMarcus fit into that math equation, right? So have you done thinking on that?
Oh yeah, I've spent a lot of thinking on that. I it's kind of a paradox because there's a good chance that he's the third best player on this team this season if he gets back to that health level that we're hoping he gets to. But he's not going to be able to play in all of the – like, yeah. Even outside of that idea that AD is best at five and LeBron is best at four, Boogie has concerns in it. So you've got to really pick your spots in terms of when you played Boogie. Now, one of AD's few weaknesses is that he doesn't do very well against big bigs on either side of the court. Mm-hmm. That's relative. Like, he's still great, right? He's just not – that's as when great. He's at his worst, right, is when he's got to defend a Jokic. Guys with, like, serious weight advantages on him, even more so than height, your Embiids, your Goberts, guys that just have quite a few pounds on him, he does not handle that particularly well on either side, at least relative to his normal production. So that's some of the value that Boogie has, right, is that AD can go to work against Paul Millsap. He's going to have a harder time against Jokic. Mm-hmm. So when Jokic is out there, you can have Boogie out there, right? That depends if Jamal Murray is coming off of – and this is where it really gets reverse engineered from, is can you survive Boogie's perimeter defense? Is there going to be somebody – like, so what Boogie's an underrated defender in that what he can do, he does very well. Mm-hmm. But he can't defend the perimeter. So if Jamal Murray is coming off of a screen and knocking down threes while Boogie's in a drop coverage, it's hard to ask Boogie, well, hedge higher to prevent that because he's not going to have the foot speed to be able to close. He could do that sometimes in the Pelicans. That's one of the areas that I think are going to be permanent as a result of the Achilles injury is his ability to defend on the perimeter. So there are going to be some times when you can't play him if you've got a guard who can come off of a screen. And in the West, there are a lot of teams like that. Yeah. You've got Golden State. Jamal Murray can get hot. Damian Lillard is a guy that you really have to hedge high on. And with the Pelicans, they would do that. I just don't know if Boogie can still do that. So that at that point, especially in high leverage games, in playoffs and so forth, that's where that LeBron at the 4, 80, at the 5 type of lineup comes into play. But there are going to be some teams that give us difficulties as a result of being able to do that. So can you keep your third best player on the floor, arguably? And the answer is probably going to be no in a lot of situations, along with what you're saying about AD being best at the 5, LeBron being best at the 4. The one thing I will say is that the best version of this team involves those three working together.
Yeah.
That's the version with the highest ceiling. Mm-hmm. So I really want Vogel and company to try to make that lineup work and try to find as many opportunities for that, because those are arguably our three best players.
And look, a reason to be optimistic about that is the number of defensive minds you have on the staff. Right. Mm-hmm. I would still love to see an offensive tactician added to this coaching staff. Like, they need one. You know, it's fine in theory to just hand the offense over to LeBron, but then when LeBron's off the court, that makes you even more vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. But as far as the coaching staff that has been put together, Vogel is known as more of a defensive guy. Hollins is known as more of a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. And you know, you kind of, to me, there's some sense here in, okay, you guys have reputations, hopefully for a reason. What's the best way to go about putting together a defense that makes a little bit more sense for these guys? How can we mitigate some of that damage? Just like we talked about and that's really what it all comes down to with somebody like Boogie, who is slightly antithetical in theory to modern basketball, is okay, mitigate some of those damages, mitigate some of the disadvantages that you're going to take on one end or the other, and then really hammer home the advantages that you get by playing a guy. And you know, the other nice thing about having Hollins here too is that he comes from that grit and grind era. Now, some of that again is going to be antiquated thinking, and some of those strategies that he employed back then aren't going to hold up to more modern basketball. But, you know, we said that for a really long time, and those Grizzly teams were a lot more competitive than the math maybe said that they should have been. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were to think of what an assistant coach can add to a team, that's something that you could really point to here, and how I don't know if it was something that was really decided on early on or how important that was to the Lakers as they were hiring Lionel Hollins, but you know, it makes that hire look really, really good.
there's something to be said about building your team around LeBron and Anthony Davis and good defense.
Yeah.
Now, do they have the personnel to be able to do that? I have some questions on that. But if you're looking to construct your coaching staff, like, I get what they were going for. I would have not necessarily picked the same people, but
yeah,
it's...
Yeah, Jason Kidd's still there.
There's also a... The Lakers have a heavier political component in their locker room than most teams do.
Yeah.
And you are going to have strong personalities that can stand up to, like, for example, I'd heard a story about, like, Mark Madsen calling out LeBron in the film room for him not, like, getting back on deep or, you know, rotating a defensive rotation. Just picture that in your head.
Like, that's like my buddy's white Labrador yelling at me for not giving him a treat.
So the thing was, is I know the play that Madsen was talking about, and Madsen was not wrong.
Yeah, there's a point to be
made. But is he the person to be delivering that
the vessel
message
matters.
LeBron's going to listen to it a little more when it's Jason Kidd, when it's Lionel Hollins, mm-hmm. when it's Phil Handy, guys like that, than the guys that they had on the coaching staff last year. And that doesn't just apply to LeBron. That's just there are men on the coaching staff that command respect from the players. Jason Kidd is one of those guys. As much as you and I feel about them, that's a different thing than how the players feel about a guy like mm-hmm. them. So there is value of having a coaching staff that guys respect, an atmosphere of accountability on the defensive end, which is really going to be the first part aside from just talent. Just like, are there people to hold these guys accountable? So it wouldn't have necessarily been how I went about it, but I get it.
Yeah. Before we go, I also want to talk about DeMarcus going up against opposing benches. This is the thing that I am the most excited about, like by a lot with DeMarcus Cousins. Now, as you said, the best version of this Lakers team is going to be one in which LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Boogie all figure it out together, right? And you won't see that group play up, you know, go up against very many bench units. But there are going to be moments, though, when DeMarcus Cousins is going to be seen as kind of the primary creator up against, you know, and hopefully with some decent spacing. You know, if I kind of think of the bench unit right now, the one that I've kind of penciled in will be something like Alex Caruso, KCP. Who am I missing here? Kyle Kuzma, DeMarcus Cousins, and like JaVale McGee, right?
I don't think you can play Boogie and McGee together. Do you think you can play them together? Maybe Jared Dudley.
There you go. That's what I was thinking of. Now that kind of complicates finding JaVale minutes, but then you just bring him in early and have him play alongside AD, I guess.
Yeah, I think they can do what they did with the Warriors. The Warriors had like a three center rotation a couple of years ago that worked well, so he'll get minutes.
But that's the group anyway. The just to rehash: Caruso, KCP, Kuzma, Dudley, and Boogie. That's a fun bench group. That's a really fun one, especially if you give – like, I think one of the things that frustrated Boogie last year was that there weren't very many moments on the court where he was just allowed to go out there. Boogie, go out there and make shit happen. Boogie, here's the ball.
That's what he does best. Yeah, that's what he does best.
Yeah.
That dude is nonstop. I'm rooting for DeMarcus Cousins harder than any – vet that's been brought in in a while. Like LeBron's his own entity, right? Like LeBron's one of the gods.
He doesn't need people to root for.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But I like this dude has so much talent to be that big, that skilled. He's got great reflexes. That year with the Pelicans, he was averaging 1.6 steals per game.
Yeah.
Right. He's got great hands. He's way smarter than people give him credit for. He's super competitive guy. I love so much of what Boogie's about. He's in a lot of ways, he's kind of my spirit animal. And like watching him on tape with the Pelicans, I'm like, I love this dude so much in a not entirely rational way, but I want so bad for him to have a comeback year, and because the Laker fans will love this dude in when he's at his best.
Yeah,
and so I'm just hoping for it so much. But yeah, there's a lot that needs to happen to get there. Sorry, I don't even know what
he's like. Likable Lance, like he's like a you know, somebody who I don't feel problematic for liking. I if you were, if the fun kind of theme, it's kind of tough. The Lakers this year are doing the whole Tyler Buss thing, right? Which, you know, sounds great. It's Kobe's former agent, and Kobe was one of the people who really pushed that sentiment the hardest back when he was playing. So fine, if that's what, that's the theme that they want to make it, then they can make it that their theme. But to me, the theme that's really interesting here is you have LeBron facing legitimate questions. You have Anthony Davis facing legitimate questions. You have now DeMarcus Cousins is going to be out here trying to have that bounce back year and hopefully get one more payday, at least one more payday over the course of his career. And that, to me, makes this team a whole lot more interesting than, oh, it's the typical title or bust team. It's it's a show-me team. It's the go-out-there and show-everybody-wrong team, everybody's-doubting-us kind of team. That's the time. That's the kind of team that's the most fun to root for. Hell, just today, Silver Screen and Roll kind of rounded up how the Lakers didn't get any love really whatsoever from ESPN in their you know, rankings of best move and who's going to be the best player next year. Like, the Lakers didn't get any love there, and to me, I would 100% embrace that. Oh yeah, you don't feel that way? Well, fuck you too then. We got this.
Yes.
I can't wait.
And along those lines, Boogie at the 3.5 or whatever it is they signed him for, to me, that's a nuts deal. Like, that's an incredible value. Yeah. I will criticize the front office when I think it's appropriate. This is going to be, we're going to be looking at this deal, barring injury, you know, a month or two into the season, being like, can you believe they got him, this guy, for $3.5 million?
Yeah. This is a question that's from a mailbag. I don't have it in front of me, and we'll wrap on this. What are the ways the Lakers could keep Boogie beyond this season?
It'd be tough. They'd have to sign him most likely to a mid-level deal. Mm-hmm. Now, there are a couple of guys with player options, so if they were to opt out, that would be one of the routes that could possibly get there. You've obviously got AD, who you're looking to re-sign for a five-year deal over this summer.
You can do that last, right, and use bird rights for that.
The problem with that is that he's going to have a cap hold that is like a max-level cap hold, I believe. I'm not a cap expert, but I believe that he's going to be taking up a large chunk of that. So it's most likely that, like, an MLE type of signing, right? Whether, even if it's just for a year, they'd get his early bird rights, which could then, gosh, I'm getting, I don't want to say things that aren't accurate and give people the wrong impression. It will be difficult to keep Boogie if he has a great season. Yeah. I think that's really what it comes down to, brass tacks.
I hope that's how it is.
Me too.
That's what Steve Kerr said last year, was that we hope that he has such a good year that it makes it really hard for us to bring him back, right? And I feel that exact same way here with Boogie. I hope that he shows out, gets that one last big deal. Does he turn 30 this year?
I think he's right about to turn 29. 29. I looked this up the other day.
He's 28. Yeah, Jen, I remember that now from the conversation we had.
Yeah, he turns 29 in a few days.
Yeah, so, you know, this will probably be his last opportunity to really play for a big contract, and I really hope that he does. I really hope that he plays well enough to get it. That'd be a great outcome to this season.
Yes,
it's going to be an interesting one, man. So far with these previews, we've done LeBron, we've done Anthony Davis, we've done Alex Caruso, we've done DeMarcus Cousins.
So in order of most important guys on the roster.
Well, you know, I would have swapped Caruso. I would have put him a little higher.
Okay. Yeah. You know, he's still got to earn it a little bit, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah. But it's those three guys, though, you know, all kidding aside with Caruso, those three guys, I've said it already. It's the most interesting dynamic, I think, of the season. And it's great that they're all going to be on the same page while they're trying to prove people wrong. Like, that they go about proving people wrong is by getting and staying on that same page and then going out and just, and what's great is that the way that they can prove people wrong is by utilizing their size and just beating the ever living piss out of every team that they go up against. It's going to be great. Yeah. It's kind of a throwback team. It's going to be. I bet James Worthy is just licking his chops to cover this team or to watch.
Oh yeah. All the old heads are like, this is the team I've been waiting for, right?
Exactly. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. We're probably going to kick off the matchup preview tomorrow. We're going to start it with the Nuggets, who I think are the best team in the West. So we'll bring on my good buddy Adam Mattis, and he'll come on to talk about that. And then Pete and I will get together on Friday, and we'll figure out what we're going to talk about for that show. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.